This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Mitch Tyne.
And I'm Bonnie North. This year's Oscar winner for Best Picture was Green Book, a fictionalized account of an African-American jazz musician, Don Shirley, trying to make a living in 1960s America.
The film introduced white audiences to something probably very few were familiar with, the Green Book itself, which offered African-Americans a guide to safe places to eat and stay across America. It was available from 1936 to 1967.
A new documentary, which is available on the Smithsonian Channel, explores the genesis of the Green Book, visits some of the places in it, and talks with people who remember using it. The film, called The Green Book, Guide to Freedom, is directed by Yoruba Richin, who's a filmmaker and professor of film at the City University of New York. She was in town last week for a screening and agreed to meet me at the Ambassador Hotel on West Wisconsin Avenue. Thank you so much for meeting me today.
Absolutely. It's great to be here. It's great to be here in Milwaukee.
And we are sitting in the Ambassador Hotel. And the reason I chose to do the interview here is because in the 1965 Green Book, this was one of the places listed. And I didn't know if you had been here, and I thought it would be a fun thing to kind of sit in a room in a place that had been in the book.
I love it. I haven't been here. I've been to Milwaukee once before. It was a very quick trip. So this is really my, like, you know, deep dive into Milwaukee. And this is the first interview that I've had where I've been interviewed at a place that was in the Green Book. So it's fantastic to be here. What a beautiful space.
How did you get interested in doing a documentary film about this? I understand you didn't know about the Green Book growing up.
That's right. I did not know about the Green Book until a production company that's based in London, actually, called Impossible Factual, approached me with the idea of doing a project about the Green Book. And, you know, I thought I knew my Black history, but this was one aspect that I didn't know. But I thought it was such an as soon as we started the conversations about it, I thought it was such an interesting way to talk about various aspects of the Black experience that we don't normally get to see on film. So I was immediately intrigued because I hadn't heard of it. And the interesting thing is once you scratch the surface, though, people have memories of having the Green Book. They have family members who had the Green Book. I was just talking with someone today. She said, we had a Green Book. It's up in my attic. I got to go find it. So, you know, it's one of those things that it's kind of like hidden in plain sight. So, yeah. And I just thought it was a great way to talk about various aspects like entrepreneurship in the Black community, the pursuit of leisure and recreation, the growth of the middle class, what the automobile industry has meant for Black folks.
Why do you think it was kind of a part of history that people either didn't talk about or didn't know about? I mean, do you think it might be because it was just so ubiquitous?
Yeah, I think it was one of those things that you don't realize the value of it until it's gone. You know, it was just a book, a guide. And so I don't think people saw the significance of it until after it was gone. And it's been rediscovered. And of course, when the New York Public Library, the Schomburg Library, which is the center for Black research, African-American research in this country, put them all online, there became a renewed interest in it, and that's what we're seeing now.
When did the Smithsonian approach you? Was that right from the beginning?
So Impossible Factual and I began talking. I was brought on as a director, and then it landed at the Smithsonian. We began our talks in the summer of 2017, and then by early 2018 is when the Smithsonian came on as a partner, as a producer.
Well, it's a wonderful film. I should have said that right at the beginning. I really enjoyed it because I learned so much about my own country. And that's what I want from documentary. I want to learn something I didn't know. Even if I had an inkling of things, I certainly knew that it was difficult for African Americans to travel in this country. I thought it was in the South. I think like a lot of white people do.
That's right. That's one of the things that we knew, that I knew I wanted to do, is to bring it out of the South, because there is this mythology and this understanding about racism and segregation that it was only in the South. So, you know, that's one of the things that when the production company and I began to talk, I said, we need to expand where we're going in this film, because the Green Book was created in New York. The first listings were in New York, in Harlem, where Victor Green, the creator, lived. And that's because there were places right in Harlem in 1936, the biggest black metropolis in the country, that we were not allowed to go to, that we could not be served. Those were the first listings in New York. And then he expanded it out to the rest of the country and to the rest of the world.
The Apollo was one of them, right?
The Apollo, no. We could go to the Apollo always, but the Cotton Club.
That's the one. I knew there was one.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Cotton Club, we could sing and dance there and perform, but we could not sit in the audience. And there were hotels that we could not go to. So I don't know why this country still insists on telling this story that, you know, that racism and segregation was confined to the South, because it was not.
How did you narrow down the scope of what you were wanting to tell, the story you wanted to tell, in the 51 or 2 minutes that you ultimately ended up with?
Yeah, well, we always knew we only had 51 minutes, so that restricts you right there. So there were a couple of principles that I knew, and that helped shape what those stories were and how we narrowed it down. So as I said, we had to get out of the South. We had to have geographic diversity. I wanted to make sure that not only were we talking about places that we were going for refuge in terms of safety, but very early on, the title was changed to The Negro Motorist's Guide to Travel and Vacation. So there are places listed in the Green Book that we went to that were black resorts all over the country, where black people went for leisure and pleasure. And that is a part of our experience. In addition, of course, the threat of violence and racism, but we were also going and seeking pleasure. So I wanted to tell that story. Also, too, we knew that the film would end around when the Green Book stopped being published, which is 1967, and when the Civil Rights Act passed, which is 1965, 2 years before. So we wanted to tell what that arc was for, not only the arc, the travel arc, but the journey for African Americans from that time in the 1930s through the 60s. So that helped to confine and narrow to the focus.
Did you find, as you were doing the research, that there were times when white history would look at a time and say, that was really a wonderful time, that was very prosperous, all of these things were going on, but for African Americans, it was a very different story? Was that true the whole time of the Green Book, or were there pockets?
I think the growth of the car industry and the growth of the automobile industry, we see in this film how it affected African Americans. And in some ways, those were very good times for this country. I mean, if you look at so the rise of the middle class and the movement of African Americans away from the South to the North and the West and to places like Milwaukee for job opportunities, those were more prosperous times than in the past. But at the same time, there were still virulent racism, segregation, of course, and economic challenges and difficulties. One of the characters in the film says, if you look at the Green Book, you see kind of a parallel universe. And that's really struck me, because our experience in this country is often a parallel universe to what the narrative is at the time. And certainly that was the case then. One of the places that we look at is Route 66, right? So Route 66, which has all this, you know, sort of mythology around, you know, just getting on the road and finding, you know, freedom and all that good stuff. African Americans, too, were on Route 66, yet there were no places that we could stay on Route 66. So our experience was a parallel experience that was different, even though we also navigated that road.
I was going to say there, I'm not remembering which comedian said it, but he said that every African American in this country is bilingual. And I think it's the same thing. It's bi-historical, bi-history, something like that, where you're part of the general big picture for everybody. But then there's, as you say, this parallel history, just
absolutely.
Like there's a parallel language.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Du Bois talked about it with the veil, you know. That's our experience. And that's why there's so many stories for us to tell, because we're starting to excavate those stories. I think of it like an archaeological excavation of that experience. And there's so much history that needs to be told and that needs to be corrected, quite frankly.
You only had 51 minutes. Did you finish the story you wanted to tell? Is there more to tell within the framework of the Green Book?
Yeah, I definitely think there are. I mean, there's other places to profile and stories behind that. There's other places to go, other businesses listed and telling those stories. And, you know, I think we really also tried to see if we could bring in the contemporary experience, and we just couldn't in that time. But I think there's certainly a lot of stories to be said around the contemporary experience of driving while Black.
I was going to say, that was one of the questions I had, is once the book stopped being published, was there anything that took its place, even if it was not quite as,
official.
Official, yeah. Or there's another, codified.
Yeah, codified.
Not quite as codified as the Green Book. Was there anything else?
I don't know if there was anything else that took its place. I mean, certainly there, I didn't come across that in my research. But there is, you know, there's, even today, there's word of mouth in terms of places for Black people, and not just African Americans, other communities too, LGBTQ communities, women. And of course, the internet has replaced a lot of that. Or even just crowdsourcing. You know, how many times you go on Facebook and people say, "Hey, I'm in such and such a place. Tell me the good spots to go, or tell me what, you know, where I shouldn't go." I mean, so we still do that, just in different ways now.
Yeah, you were saying that he was really the first crowdsourcer for this kind of book.
Absolutely, yeah.
A resource, maybe, is a better word.
Yes, for this guide. Definitely. So from the very beginning, Victor Green was a postal worker. And so he had a network of Black postal workers that went out into the community and sent back information on where the Black businesses were, and also encouraged those businesses to advertise in the book. And then in every one of the editions, he says, "Please send in information." And Victor writes, "Please send in information. You know, this is your book. We need you to, you know, to update it." We update it every year. So people were sending in information and advertising their businesses in the book.
One of the things towards the end of the film, people were talking about saving some of the places that are no longer in business, that they've either been abandoned, the proprietor died, whatever happened. Are you finding people are reaching out to you to try to do those things, to try to save this history?
Yeah, you know, I just was with the Historical Preservation, African American Historical Preservation folks. The gentleman who leads that is a man named Brent Leggs. He's in the film. And I was at a conference last week, and there were people from the organization there, and they said, "We're getting calls. We're getting tons of calls saying, how can we help? How can we do exactly that? What can we do to help preserve these places?" So they're calling the right place. I'm not the keeper of that information, but it's fantastic to be able to contribute to that and to the knowledge around that is a real, you know, it's a real pleasure for me.
Was there anything in the research and in the filming that you did that just surprised you completely?
So I'm from New York. You know, I didn't grow up in a kind of car culture. To understand really what the automobile meant for Black people was kind of a revelation for me. Not only, I mean, as a form of mobility and freedom, literally to help get out, one of the ways that we got out of the South was by driving and, you know, during the Great Migration, but also what the automobile industry meant for African Americans in terms of jobs, in terms of moving up through the middle class. Victor Green writes in one of the books, one of the guides, he says, you know, the automobile, I think it was in like 1939 or 40, he says the automobile industry is giving African Americans an economic opportunity like no other industry has. So that was really interesting to learn and to understand what cars meant to us as a people.
And I was going to say, you said the two words middle class. So it was the rise of the Black middle class, too, that was sort of happening through this.
Absolutely.
And made that possible, even as Jim Crow was still very much alive and kicking, and even though we still needed the Civil Rights Act, and even though in 2019 we still are sitting in the most segregated city in the United States.
You know, we know, you know, a lot of us African Americans know about the brilliance of our community and of our people and the resilience that despite all these things that you just outlined, that we were taking advantage of, you know, new industries, that we were pushing through and having pleasure and recreation and leisure, that we were driving on these roads where we faced the threat of violence and sundown towns, for example, but that we not only did that, but thrived and built businesses and built communities. And that's really what I hope the film shows in the end, that despite this, despite the terrorist conditions that we lived in, that we thrived. That's really what I hope people can get out of the film.
It has been such a pleasure, Yoruba, to talk with you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for meeting me in the Ambassador Hotel. Maybe there's a story here.
Absolutely, yes. It was great to be here, and being in Milwaukee has been fantastic. Thank you.
Yoruba Richin is the filmmaker behind the documentary The Green Book, Guide to Freedom, available on the Smithsonian Channel website. We spoke with her at the Ambassador Hotel, one of the entries in the 1965 edition of The Green Book itself. There is a link to the film at WUWM.com.